ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
I've been speaking on Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, and I'm continuing to do that. Okay, name 51. So, only 949 to go. Manu, the name of Vishnu is Manu, a well-known name around here, no doubt. You don't know, you can't get the joke. No. The temple president here since the creation practically. is Manu. Now it's Gopala Acharya Prabhu. Otherwise it was Manu Prabhu. So I'm not sure which Manu he was. Swayambhuva or Vairasvata, maybe it is Manu. It's the name of Vishnu. Generally we think of Manu, the 14 Manus in one day of Brahma, the overseers of the universe. They're also one kind of avatar of Vishnu, the six kinds of avatars, among whom one is the Manvantara avatar. That means that Vishnu appears in one day. Within each period of Manu, there's a Vishnu avatar, who's called the Manvantara avatar. But Manu is a name of Vishnu, directly. And it means he who thinks. I got the Sanskrit. Yeah? Where is it? Oh, I don't see it. Anyway, this is a similar name to Mahamana, which is another name which comes later in Vishnu Sahasranama, which means the great mind. So he who thinks, everyone thinks. That is the symptom of a living being, and particularly in the human form of life, as compared to other forms of life, the thinking function is considerably more than in other forms of life. Some forms of life, there's consciousness, but not thinking, just like a plant is conscious, but a plant has no reasoning, although it will grow toward the sunlight. But there's, as we can see, there's no thinking, there's no power of discrimination. Only in the human form of life. Even the dogs and they know what's right and what's wrong. Maybe in a dog a slightly developed sense. They know they're not supposed to pass stool in the house. Once they've had their nose passed, put in the stool as a puppy, they know they're not supposed to do that, but they don't really have a sense of right and wrong. That's only there in the human form of life. Now thinking, there are various aspects to thinking. A lot of the thinking we do, the thought processes, we don't really think about it. It just kind of happens. We talk about instinct, for instance. If you see, you're standing under a tree and the branch cracks and you look up and it's falling, you jump out of the way. You don't think, now the branch is falling. If I stand here for approximately 2 seconds, then according to the laws of physics, then the tree branch will follow me, and then according to the laws of biology, I'll have a gash on my head. And we don't think like that, we just and get out of the way. So, a lot of the thinking, our great friend, or we're supposed to be friendly to everyone, Sigmund Freud, has analyzed thinking process, subliminal processes, how deep within the consciousness there are various thought processes. Our thought processes are not with Mr. Spock-like. They're not simply logical analyses, but our thought processes are mixed up with our desires and with our emotions, and therefore different people think in different ways about the same thing, or they have different areas of interest. So it's a very vast subject, no doubt. Apart from that, there are different kinds of thinking, just like contemplation is one kind of thinking. Planning is another kind of thinking. So, Vishnu is known as the great thinker. This mananam, it comes from the mananam. This manu comes from mananam, which is one kind of thinking, which is to contemplate a subject matter having heard about it. In the Vedas, the three terms are derived, that shravanam, mananam, nididhyasanam. Hear, to contemplate, and then to, or to consider the subject matter, and then to deeply meditate upon it. So Vishnu's thinking is not exactly the same as that of a human. We are thinking in, one thing is we're in ignorance, and we are frogs in our own little wells. We tend to think of reality as what we perceive. And we tend to take what is going on around us as very important. Just like, it might come in the news, an earthquake, 2,000 people killed in China. But if I stub my toe, that to me seems much more important. Or that my dog has got a sneezing fits. That to me is more, that occupies my thoughts more than news of 2,000 people killed in China, according to the news. Or that scientists have discovered the God particle, that which holds the universe together. Idiots. They think just some particle of matter holds everything together. So that's big news for them after 48 years of thinking. They finally discovered something which they think holds the universe together, but it doesn't. The next thing they'll discover, this is how science goes, they discover something and they think, oh, we came up with the answer. And then someone else thinks about it some more and says, well, actually there's some problem with this. And then they try to shut him up, and then more people find out that there's a problem with that. And then they get stuck, and then they do more research, and then they come up with the answer. And it goes on like that, on and on and on. So this is thinking in ignorance. In ignorance and in self-centeredness, thinking that I am the center of the universe. Now Vishnu, he also thinks I am the center of everything, but he's right. So, yeah, our thinking like that is simply our false egoism. But when he thinks Ishvaro hamaham bhogi siddho ham balavan sukhi, which is described by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita as being the symptom of a demoniac person, and to think I am the Lord of everything, I am the enjoyer of everything, I am perfect, powerful and happy. Krishna says anyone who thinks like that is a demon, but he himself does that more than anyone else. But he's not a demon, because anyone else but Krishna who thinks like that is wrong. And it's so pathetic. I mean, even the insect thinks like that. I'm sitting on this piece of stool, and who could be better, more situated than me? This perfect piece of stool provides everything. I've got it all worked out how to crawl down inside it, and you know, my breakfast, lunch and dinner is all provided, and who could be more happy than me? So the big leaders of society, they come together, conferences discussing how they can, I don't know what they discuss, all kinds of things, how to manipulate this and manipulate that, and we're in charge, and they're just like little children playing with bricks. So Vishnu, he actually is the center of everything. He contemplates. He thinks about himself. Again, egoistic. When Krishna in Dwarka, he meditates on himself. What else is there to meditate on? There's nothing else worth meditating on. So Krishna appears to be the most egoistic person, and he is, but that is pure ego. He thinks about himself. And his thinking encompasses everything. And it's not like a difficult that's the other kind of thinking, isn't it? There are so many different ways of thinking. Solving problems, just like crossword puzzles. There's no need to solve crossword puzzles, but people take pleasure in that. It's just like some mental exercise. Solving mathematical problems. So people exercise their intelligence. But what they don't understand is the buddhi buddhimattam asmi, Krishna says. I am the intelligence of the intelligence. So that intelligence comes from Krishna. And Krishna is not that he sits down and thinks, well, try to work things out. Everything is apparent to him, everything. He doesn't have to do any philosophical speculation to try to understand anything. Everything is automatically, in all respects, known to him. Vedaham samatitani, vartamanani charjana, bhavishyani cha bhutani, mantu vedana kaschana. Krishna says that I know everything in the present, in the past, I will know everything that's to be, but me no one knows. They don't know me. How can we know him when our mental capacities are so small? So with our limited intelligence, which is also coming from Krishna, we cannot conceive of Krishna, who has unlimited intelligence, unlimited power, unlimited everything. So it's completely beyond our capacity to understand him except by his mercy, which is the purport, or that's just other names of Vishnu in this Vishnu Sahasranama, Aprameya, he who is immeasurable, Agrahya, he who is ungraspable. So such names, they define Vishnu as being no avang manasa gochara. In the Vedas, all these descriptions are given. He is not within the scope of understandability by verbal descriptions or by mental acts, but only by his mercy does he reveal himself. So we can't imagine, it's complete. completely beyond our capacity to even begin to understand the mind of Vishnu. It's very difficult to understand the mind even of any human being. It may be that we've lived with someone for many years, but we still can't work them out at all. Difficult, isn't it? You have some insights. Or it may be that someone, they're acting, I mean, they're not, they're not what we say, very kind of extroverted kind of person given to acting in unusual ways, but a very methodical kind of person who acts in a very predictable way. But even such a person, they may suddenly do something very strange. A few years ago I saw there was some report of one middle-aged man in England who was some like a chartered accountant or something like that. And just his kids were grown up and just lived a very ordinary, humdrum, predictable kind of life with his wife so many years. And one day he just suddenly picked up a hammer and hammered her to death. So, how do you explain that? It's very difficult, and even within psychology, there are all these different schools of psychology that are trying to understand the nature of the self, the nature of the human psychology. But there are completely different approaches to doing so. What is that? The behavioral psychology, that's a big thing at the moment. They're different schools. They have different theories as to what the basic nature of the mind is. And according to that, they interpret. And some lay more stress on the genetic code, and others lay more stress on the enculturation that you received as a child. In economics, it's just presumed that everyone wants to get as much as they can. That if you offer people that do this and you'll get so much money, that people will do it. They say everyone's got their price. But that's not necessarily true. There have been cultures in the world in which people deliberately don't want to appear to be greedy because that's considered very bad. There's one of our godbrothers, he was in India, he was making some project with building some houses, and he was going as usual very slowly. So he said to the contractor, here, tell them I'll pay them double, the workers. He said, they'll just start working. I said, don't do that. That's the worst thing you can do. But anyway, he did. And the next day the workers didn't come at all. He said, I paid them double. Why didn't they come? And the contractor said, well, they got enough money for the next day, so why should they come? You think you pay more, they'd be more eager to work. But they only have very limited needs. They can't imagine that now I'm going to invest the money and build up some shares and buy an iPad and all this kind of thing. You just need money to eat, that's all. Then what do you need? Even food they're getting at their home. They're growing. So there are various theories in psychology, but the very fact that there are different theories suggests that they don't really know what they're talking about very well. And even some of the, like that, the basic theory in economics is that everyone is greedy for money and possessions. That's maybe true in the modern world because that's how people have been raised, but it doesn't apply everywhere and in all circumstances. So even to understand the human mind is very difficult. Of course, we have in Bhagavad Gita the basics of Krishna gives the basics of psychology, the perverse tendency to desire material enjoyment is that that is the overwhelming feature of materialistic consciousness, which causes us to act in what in psychological terms would be called in irrational ways. So that's the basis of Vedic psychology. Exactly how people act in irrational ways, well, there are different cultures throughout the world who they have social systems based on acting in ways which are presumed to be mutually beneficial, but actually it's all unbeneficial without Krishna consciousness. So to understand the thinking or even of a human is very difficult. Sometimes they do experiments on dogs and rats to try to understand human thinking, just like Pavlov's dogs. But can we even begin to understand the mind of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? What kind of supercomputer is that to manage the workings of all the universes and ekam yo vidhati kaman, to fulfill the desires of everyone in such a way that is commensurate with their previous the fruits of their previous activities, to put people together in such a way that they can mutually give each other the karma, the karmic result that they need, just like that's described in the story of Chitraketu, that sometimes one's enemy may be born as one's son, and you think it's your greatest friend, but then he dies and gives you so much grief. Or he behaved just like Vena, gave so much pain to his father by acting in such a demoniac manner. So it's all extremely complex. But Vishnu has it all worked out. And not only that, it's not that he's sitting down and trying to work it all out. Automatically, it goes on. By his desire. That's another point. His thinking is automatically affected. It's not that he has to make some plan. Okay, now we have to do this, we have to do that, and what if that goes wrong? And then we have to make a backup plan. But everything is perfectly affected by his Ichha Shakti. Parasya Shakti Vividhaiva Shuryate Swabhaviki Jnana Balakragacha. He has unlimited potencies, and just by his thinking, everything is accomplished. So who can understand the mind of God? Now, another feature of his thinking is, like I said, it's not just all Mr. Spockish, where it's all just logic and analysis, but all of Krishna's thinking is permeated with his love for all living beings, his desire for the benefit of all living beings, and his being the supreme enjoyer, but not in a way that is exploitive of others. He's the supreme enjoyer, but when we think of that, being an enjoyer from our materialistic way of thinking, we can't imagine what Krishna's mode of enjoyment is. That he is simply joyful by nature, and he simply wants to share that with others, which means to share himself with others. So Krishna is all thoughts, all desires, all management of the universe, that is all pervaded with his mercy and bliss and sweetness and love meant for the upliftment and the for the benefit of everyone. So we can discuss a little bit. The acharyas have given us insights into Krishna's way of thinking. Those who are very close to him, they may not, just like you may live very closely to someone, not fully understand them, but to some extent you understand them. To some extent they may be predictable. It's predictable that Krishna will always act in a manner beneficial for others. Exactly what he will do may not be predictable. But the acharyas, because they're very close to Krishna, they have given some insights into his way of thinking. Now, another remarkable feature of Krishna, his thinking, is that although he knows everything, for the sake of his lila, to make everything very sweet, he appears as if he doesn't know everything. He appears as if he's an ordinary person. In many ways he appears as if he's an ordinary person. So he also becomes surprised. Otherwise there'd be no fun. If you know everything already, then where's the fun? Where's the enjoyment? There's no adventure. Then Krishna wouldn't need to kill demons. Why does he kill demons? He just, by his thinking, he can kill them. Then why bother? But that's all enjoyment for his devotees. So he's in Vrindavan playing, and then some demon comes and all his friends become afraid, and then Krishna tightens up his belt and says, "Don't worry, I'll look after them." And he kills the demon. Sometimes with a great struggle, he gets swallowed by Bakasura, and then with Kaliya, all the residents of Vrindavan, they're practically dead, thinking that Krishna is finished. So, and it appears to be like a big struggle, that Krishna has to struggle to overcome them. So, why is that? If just by his thinking he can kill them, or if you want to take it further, they don't really need to exist at all. We don't need to exist. Krishna's self-sufficient. He can just sit and think. But there's no fun, there's no love, there's no enjoyment. So Krishna, by his lila shakti, he makes so many different kinds of situations in which it appears that he has to struggle to overcome. Actually, he can overcome easily, but even he may forget that. Otherwise, it wouldn't be any fun for him either. So how to understand all this? Well, we can think about it, but we can't understand it very much, to some extent. We can understand it. Another definition of mananam, from which this name is, manu is derived, to mentally conceive an act prior to the act itself. And you're thinking about it, you should do like that, do like this. And then we think, and then we act. We should, especially before taking any major decision that will have consequences for, or serious consequences for ourselves and others, we should think. That's it often appears to be absent in the, even in very intelligent people in the world, they make policies like don't grow food. Pay the farmers to not grow food, because they think that somehow or other they have their schemes that by doing so things will be better. So they have their plans, they have their ideas, But they're very often amazingly stupid. So, but that's Krishna's illusory energy. But Krishna himself, his way of thinking is how to bring pleasure to his devotees. That's his, the Krishna's main motivation. Just like we may think the motivation of people is money, how to get money. If you give people the opportunity to make money, then they'll go for it. They'll like that. But Krishna's motivation is how to give pleasure to his devotees. And Krishna, he makes all kinds of plans how to do so. This is especially within his, in his lila forms, how he manages the universe, that as Vishnu, he oversees the affairs of the universe. But he himself, as Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, he is simply thinking how to meet Radharani. That's his main thought, whatever else he's doing. And the funny thing is, he meets her and then he teases her, or tells her that actually, or pretends he's not interested in her. So Krishna's thinking is very difficult to understand. So he may appear to be like a lusty person. If we try to understand him from our frog-in-the-well intelligence. Therefore, better to understand him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the explanations of the Acharyas. Just by his thinking, ekam shena stito jagat, the whole universe is manifested and maintained simply with just a tiny little bit of his opulence, just by some thought, then the universe is created. So how great he is, and how much we may think we're great thinkers, intelligent philosophers, scientists, how insignificant we are before Krishna. Considering all the qualities of Krishna, we should consider how insignificant we are and how kind he is to extend himself and make or give us the opportunity to associate with him. So manu, that means this, from this comes the word, English word man. Manu is the father of mankind. Manu is also another meaning of that is mantra. Nama Sreshtam Manavapi. There's this, that in that shloka, that Manam means mantra. So these are different meanings of the word Manu, and there may be many meanings. So as I said, I'll speak briefly now, unless there's any questions specific to this discussion. I'll finish otherwise. Thinking. Any question? Hare Krishna! Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya, Śrī Śrī Gaura Nitāya ki jaya, Śrī Śrī Rādhā Govinda ki jaya. Hare Krishna. Vishnu Sahasranama. Last time I spoke here on Manu. So one of the meanings of the word Manu, which I didn't speak about, was that Manu means mantra.
He is the Vedic mantras. He is the source of the Vedic mantras. All the Vedic mantras are meant to glorify Him. Sarve Veda Tatparamamananti. Vedaisya Sayavarahameva Vedaha. So that's another important meaning. We can see that some of the names they have, the same name has many different meanings and are quite unrelated to Manu, who thinks. That's quite a different meaning to that of who is the mantra, who is the mantras of the Vedas. So Sanskrit is such a language that one word can have many meanings. Of course, in other languages, that's there also. Just like, there's so many words with different meanings. What about the word Jack? Jack can be a name, it can be something that you use for putting your car up when you need to change the tire or some other such function. It can mean these little things that you flip around, some little game. There may be so many meanings of the word Jack, or Mike is a man's nickname, or it's one of these things here. So they can have different meanings, but the meanings are just conventional, and the meanings can change. Like the meaning of the word gay used to mean, it used to be an adjective or an adverb for something which is light and light-natured, carefree, happy. But in recent years, it has come to have a completely different meaning, which everyone knows what it means. So different words have different meanings in different languages, but in Sanskrit, it's not exact. It's not just that the language is changing and therefore different meanings get ascribed to words, but the very language is eternal and it's all meant for glorifying Krishna. Actually, every language should be also simply meant for glorifying Krishna. Otherwise, it's whatever is spoken which is not meant for the glorification of Krishna is like a place of pilgrimage for crows. So Sanskrit is a very complex language with many subtle meanings, and various roots which can be interpreted in various ways. And Madhvacharya, he proposed to give a meaning of every name in Vishnu Sahasranam, to give 100 meanings. So that may require great expertise in Sanskrit even to understand that. Madhvacharya, when he proposed to do so, the pundits who were present, they challenged him to do so, and he started to do so, and they asked him to stop because they couldn't understand his explanations, because there are such levels of understanding of a language, of this language. But all the words, they're all meant simply to glorify Krishna. Vede Ramayane Chaiva Purane Bharate Tata Adavante Cha Madhye Cha Sarvatra Hari Giyate. All the Vedic literature, the Vedas, Brahmanas, Aranyakas, Ramayana, Puranas, they're all simply meant for glorifying Krishna. Although some people don't understand that. So the Acharyas come and they explain all these points. So exactly what is the derivation of the word Manu as to mean one who thinks, to mean mantra, I don't know, because I'm not a Sanskrit scholar. And even if I did know and tried to explain it, you wouldn't understand it either, because you're also not Sanskrit scholars. But we'll take it on authority of those who have explained it in this way. And by Srila Prabhupada's grace, this is now all being explained in this language, English, which was not at all meant, never conceived of for glorifying Krishna. Well, in an indirect way, there are the praising God, the conception of God in the Western barbarian culture, or is a fairly, well, it's an approximation or an incomplete understanding of Krishna. So they glorify him, but even how they glorify him, that they have to learn from Srila Prabhupada. Just like, when I was a child at school, we sometimes used to sing a song, all things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small, all things wise and wonderful, the good Lord made them all. With the idea that the good Lord made this world just for us to enjoy it. A lot of problems came out of that idea. Recently I was on a train in India and there was a nun. She asked me how many years I'd been a monk, and I said 30-some, whatever it was, 30. She said, well, I've been a nun for 53 years. She was an old woman, so. It was quite a fired up preacher. So, she was talking about God. Of course God exists. You see, he made someone, as she was eating her something unmentionable. She said, God gave us the tongue so we can enjoy the taste. So this is their concept, that you kill the animal, you eat the animal, it tastes nice, it's all God's mercy. That's what God does for us. So, Srila Prabhupada, he usually used the term Supreme Personality of Godhead, Supreme Person, Supreme Control. The term God is a vague idea, a misunderstanding of Krishna. Recently I was in France, I was told that the national revulsion against Christianity, which has gone on for the last almost 300 years, is still so strong. It's actually good for preaching, I was told, because you don't talk about God, you just talk about Krishna directly. Krishna is the supreme, beautiful, and people like, if you start talking about God, and people, they get all irritated, so I was told, so. We are discussing Vishnu Sahasranama, the qualities of, or the names of Vishnu, which reflect his qualities, forms, attributes, pastimes,